Most of us generally want to do the right thing. We want to be good. I mean, there are occasions when we are not successful, but we try to do the right thing, to be good. Even a criminal or a gangster or a mafia probably doesn't want his son to follow in his footsteps. He would be happier if his son got out of the life of crime and, you know, became a, and he will try to educate him and all. So in this chapter, we heard about sattva, rajas and tamas. Sattva is doing the right thing, honesty, truthfulness, sincerity, knowledge, purity. Talking about doing the right thing, this young boy, Boy Scout, came home telling his mother, "Mom, I did my good deed for today." He said, "Oh, that's very good. What did you do?" So the Boy Scout says, "Well, I helped this old lady cross the street." So mother says, "That's very good. She must have been happy." He said, "No, she didn't actually want to cross the street." So we want to be good, and that's why we always want to be sattvic. And we have a barometer within us that tells us whether we are sattvic, rajasic, or tamasic. Barometer is like the weather. All the meteorologists have that, where depending on the pressure of the atmosphere, they know whether it's going to rain or it's going to be sunny or cloudy and all that. Of course, they have a lot of other instruments. So we all have an internal barometer that tells us, okay, now I'm in a tamasic mood, I'm lazy, I'm being, you know, I just don't care. And so from there, they say, no, you know, you need to get out, go out and work. So I go and work, I become rajasic. But then rajas has its own problems because of over-accomplishment, overwork, selfishness. And so then the scriptures tell us you need to be sattvic, you need to be pure. And what do we mean by doing the right thing or being sattvic? They say the ego. Anything that is done with ego and egocentric, I and mine, ends up in rajas. Anything that is unselfish, him and his, or your and yours, or, you know, to the, that is dedicated to the community, that is for the welfare of all, are the pure sattvic activities. And what is important is the motive. It's not the action, but it is the motive, like we had studied about danam, you know, giving charity. Is good, but dan can also be tamasic. If you give something to somebody that is harmful, you know, like selling weapons or giving somebody a gun as a Christmas gift, is a tamasic gift, because you're, you know, a rajasic gift is the one that is given so that I may get something back, like given to a politician or a leader, where you give him some money for the election so that after the elections, when he wins, I can get my contract. And sattvic gift is gift that is done without any expectation, done the right thing that has to be done at this moment to the right person. So the same activity, giving, can be tamasic, rajasic, or sattvic depending on the motive. So the motive is very important. Then they say that, how do you give up the ego? By surrender. In your spiritual journey, first step is to do unselfish work. But even there, the sense of doership is there. I am serving the community, I'm doing so much work, I'm helping so many. Higher than that is when you surrender, where you don't even have the idea that I am working. He is working through me. So any activity of service, the best thing is to say through me, not by me. So this activity is happening through me, not by me. I am not doing it, but the Lord is working through me. So that kind of surrender, when it comes, then you go even beyond sattva. You go even beyond that. You go to the highest state. The example they gave is driving. Of course, nowadays we don't have stick shift, but in the olden days we used to have stick shifts. And it's very interesting. When you're climbing a hill, the car starts struggling, you know, grr, 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 it starts. So then what do? You shift to the second gear or maybe even the first gear, depending on the severity of the hill. So your mind is always in tune with the car that, okay, well, now the car is stalling, I need to change the gear. And then when it's going downhill, then again, then your second gear is restricting it, so you go back to the fourth gear. So similarly, I should always be observing my mind. I should know my mind, and I should know that at this moment my mind is going downward. It is stalling. It is going in tamas and rajas. So I have to bring it to sattva. So you constantly adjust your mind just as you adjust the gears of the car. And so constant observation as to what is happening in my mind is very, very important. What is my mind doing at this moment? And when you do that, that becomes a very wonderful sadhana, a very beautiful way of practicing spirituality, is to be an observer of the mind, be alert and decide that, okay, my mind has to do the right thing. But at the same time, one should not be at the whim of the mind. You know, oh, I feel like doing this, let me do this, I feel like doing that. No, I should decide what is right. I should observe the mind and then direct the mind. So I should live consciously. Lot of us just live unconsciously. I felt like doing it, I did it. And then afterwards somebody says, why did you do it? I don't know. I just felt like doing it. Don't you think it was wrong? I don't care. So that is called living unconsciously, where you let your mind just decide, oh, whatever I feel like. But using the intellect to discriminate is to be awake, to be alert. Talking about awake, you know, you may be driving for 4, 5, 6 hours and you have driven very good, very beautifully within the speed limit and all that. And suddenly you feel tired, and for a moment you doze off. It, you know, we all have those things happen, and then you become scared. Oh, what happened? And so then you quickly, either you park on the side of the road, or you should, you know, stop and get a cup of coffee or take a little break or a nap. So that is called conscious driving, where you are constantly alert as to the conditions of the road, the conditions of the weather. You tailor your speed according to that. So similarly, I have to tailor the speed of my mind, the way it is working, how my body is working, consciously, alertly, constantly being awake and seeing the surroundings, seeing how people are around me. And so constantly adjusting my life according to the scriptures, according to what is told in the Gita and all, is called conscious living. And that is true sadhana. One of the most beautiful ways to remove the ego, to make surrender and to purify or uplift the mind, is by chanting the Lord's name. The moment you remember the Lord, and remember it not mechanically, but remember it with attention, immediately your mind gets uplifted. Your mind becomes pure. Your mind becomes, goes to the higher. And it can be any name of the Lord, whoever your devta is. You know, you can chant even Om, or Om Namah Shivaya, or Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, or whatever. So chanting the name of the Lord immediately uplifts it. Like if I tell you all, think about your children, how your mind instantly goes, wherever the child may be, maybe here, maybe in New York, maybe in another country, and your mind becomes so happy the moment you think about your child. Unless he's a teenager, then maybe not. But generally, you know, you think about the children, it makes. So similarly, chanting the Lord's name is the best way to uplift the mind. The moment I close my eyes and think of Shiva sitting in meditation, Krishna playing the flute, or Jesus on the cross, or Mother Goddess, Mother Saraswati, how the mind becomes purified, mind becomes uplifted. So that is the way. So the goal of all of us, see, we started out as animals. You know, that's what the Darwin's theory of creation says. And even the Hindu philosophy says that we go through different stages of evolution, you know, through our different births. You know, that is, they say, 84 lakh yoni. It took 8.4 million births, from starting from plant to fish to bird and animal, to finally become a human. So what is my goal of life? Should I just stay a human? No, I should become a God man. So from animal, I become a man. From man, I become a God man. I become a saint. I become a realized soul. I become one with God. So constantly keeping the mind in sattva and working with that attitude is what is required. So following these steps, one can evolve. So this little background kind of summarizes what we have studied in the previous verses and takes us now to the, until now we had studied, you know, the different yagnas, you know, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic activities, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic tapas or austerity, sattvic, rajasic and tamasic food. But now in the 17th chapter, it becomes more serious. It's a little more, takes us higher. The Lord is taking us higher to how one can go beyond these to the highest, where even sattva is transcended. That it should be the goal of human birth. So that is done in the verse number 23 onwards. The rest of them are giving us the higher knowledge of the Upanishads. So verse number 23, chapter 17. Om Tat Sat Iti Nirdeshah Brahmanas Trividha Smritah Brahmanas Tena Vedascha Yajnascha Vihitah Pura. So Om Tat Sat. Now this is a very, very powerful mantra. Om Tat and Sat. And we find that it is chanted in many places. Like every chapter of the Bhagavad Gita ends with Om Tat Sat Iti Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishad. Similarly, when Brahmaji started the creation, he started with chanting of Om and Atha. Atha means now. So Om is used everywhere. Every mantra before we chant, like we say Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, or just Om. Om itself has a lot of power. We'll be talking in the verse number 24 about Om. So Om Tat Sat. Om is the, what is Om? Om is the transcendental Brahman. See, there is the formless Brahman, the one that is all-pervading, that supports the universe. But that has no form, no shape, no color, no description, cannot be seen, cannot be heard, cannot be thought of, cannot be contemplated, cannot be understood. Neither the mind can reach it, nor the intellect can understand it. Obviously, you cannot see it, hear it, smell it. So that transcendental Brahman, which is actually the highest, and that is the goal of all human birth, is to become one with that. So he says, if this is cannot be seen, heard, smelled, tasted, touched, thought of, then how am I to know it? You don't know it, you become it. By when your ego ends and when your mind becomes completely still, Om is that transcendental Brahman, that is my illumining presence that gives me life, makes me work. So when the mind becomes still in meditation, when the perceiver, feeler and thinker is gone, I am no longer conscious about my body, mind and intellect, then in that silence I experience oneness. Because actually that is me, that is oneness, that is, which we'll talk in more detail when we talk about Tat. How can I be that? So we'll talk in more detail next week. They say, you are that Brahman. And then Rishi says, Aham Brahmasmi, I am Brahman. How can I, that limited, useless individual, be that reality? We'll talk about next week. So that Om is the transcendental Brahman, which we'll talk in little more detail in the next verse. Then the next word is Tat Sat. Tat is Ishvara or God. So this transcendental reality, which cannot be seen, heard, thought of, what does it do? It makes it easy for us. Out of the compassion of this Lord, that Brahman, that consciousness, out of compassion, it takes various forms. So that's why we have Ishvara. Ishvara is God, which is what? Which is the creator, sustainer, destroyer, which in our Puranas are personified as Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh. So when the moment you think of Brahmaji, you think of, you know, somebody with four heads, doing the creation. When you think of Vishnu Bhagwan, you see, think of him lying on the Sheshnag, on the snake, and sustaining the whole universe. You think of Shiva, you think of this, you know, peaceful, serene form in meditation. So that reality, when it functions through the total vasanas, through the individual vasana is the individual creation, but the total vasanas is called Maya, the creative power of the Lord. So when that Lord, the Bhagavan, the Brahman, the consciousness, Father in heaven, when it functions through the total Maya, it becomes Ishvara, becomes God, the sustainer, creator, and destroyer, and that is called Tat. And we'll discuss Tat in more detail next week. And then the Tat Sat. And what is Sat? Sat is reality. I am. Which existence. Like this table exists, right? The table is not non-existent. This glass exists, the chair exists, you all exist, I exist. So that existence called I am is Sat. So if I ask you, who are you? You say, oh, I am Haresh, or I am Manu, or I am Girish. No. I didn't ask you your name. Who are you? You say, well, I am a male, I am a female. I didn't ask you your sex. Who are you? You say, I am Indian, I am American. I didn't ask you your nationality. Who are you? You say, oh, I am white, or I am black, or I am Hispanic. I didn't ask you your race. Who are you? So, well, I'm the father of so and so. In India, they say, oh, I'm the son of so and so, my father. I didn't ask your relationships. Who are you? So the moment you keep asking, ultimately it comes to I am. I am is the final, the final description, the final address, the final location is I am. Everything else is an upadhi. Everything else is a description, whether I am white or black or I am short or tall or I am young or old or I am Indian or American or husband or wife or child, mother. These are all upadhis. These are all relationships. These are all additions to I am. So I am, when you say, that denotes reality, existence. So Om Tat Sat are the three names of Lord. That's why he says Om Tat Sat iti nirdeshah. It is the indicator of what? Brahmana, of this Brahman, the total consciousness, Brahman, trividham smritah. So in three ways, this total consciousness is described. So if you want to understand that total consciousness, Bhagavan the Lord, you say that three things, Om Tat Sat. The moment you say those three, then it indicates that Lord. Again, that Lord is, it cannot be described, but can be indicated. That's why it is Nirdeshah. It is the indicator. Nirdesha also means, another meaning is, which we'll talk about later on, is how that it corrects your mistake. So we'll talk about that. So Om Tat Sat iti Nirdeshah Brahmana Trividha Smritah. It is indicated. And from that consciousness, what was created? What did came out of it? Brahmana. So when he says Brahmana, he does not only mean Brahmans, but also Kshatriyas and Vaishyas and Shudras. All the castes came. And then when we think of Brahmana, people always think, oh, you know, one wearing a janeu, wearing a thread, or having a choti is Brahman. So Gurudev says, Brahmans are not the threaded variety. Brahmans are the ones who are pursuing Brahman. It's not what birth, not which family they were born from, not what clothes they wear, not what whether they have a thread or not. It is the one who is Brahmana Charati Iti Brahmana. So the one whose mind is constantly thinking about the Lord. So the one who knows the scriptures, one who understands the scriptures, one who supports the scriptures, the Shastras, is called Brahmana. So the one who spreads the knowledge of the scriptures is Brahmana. He could be even Shudra. So many of our saints were Shudra. So many of them were Kshatriyas. Janak Maharaj was a Kshatriya, was a realized master, you know, realized saint. So many of them were Vaishyas, businessmen like Narsimha Mehta. You know, he belonged to a business family, but a great saint. So it does not, it's not related to the birth, but it is related to the your functions. So, you know, to your duties. And then he says Brahmana and Vedascha. And all the Vedas also came from from that one consciousness. And in when you chant Purush Suktam, a lot of you have memorized that, Tasmat Yajnyat Sarva Hutaha Vicha Samani Jagnire Chanda Gumsi Jagnire Tasmat Yajus Tasmat Ajayata. So all the Vedas, the Rig Veda, the Sam Veda, the Yajur, the Atharva Veda, all Vedas, and Vedas only does not mean only the four Vedas, means all the scriptures, whether it's Bible or Quran or Bhagavad Gita or Guru Granth Sahib or the Dharmapada of Buddhism. In fact, not only that, but Veda also represents knowledge, Vid. So all knowledge, not only spiritual knowledge, but science and philosophy and chemistry and medicine and mathematics and economics and commerce and business, all knowledge came from that one consciousness. So all the castes came. That's why in the Purushottam, Brahmano Mukham Asit Bahu Rajanya Kritaha Guru Tadasya Yad Vaishya Padbhyagam Shudro Ajayata. So all the castes came from him, all the knowledge came from him. And Yajna. Yajna means all, not only the rituals, that is Yajna, but Yajna in the fourth chapter of the Gita we had studied, Yajna is the community activities where the community gets together and works for the benefit of all is called Yajna. So all were Vihita Pura. So in the ancient times, everything emerged from him and him alone. So he alone, that consciousness alone, expresses as all those three. And chanting of this Om Tat Sat, it not only purifies the mind, but corrects the mistakes. Again, it'll go in the next verse. But say, suppose I'm doing a ritual and I do not do it correctly. Or if I'm involved in a community activity, when I'm doing something for the benefit of the community, and I make a mistake and I, you know, didn't do as good a job as I should have. So they say, it's okay. As long as your motive was pure, just chant Om Tat Sat. Oh Lord, forgive me, I'll do better next time. Or I'm doing tapa, I'm doing some austerity, some fasting, some self-control, some discipline. And for some reason I fall off. You know, I had promised that I won't eat sweets or I won't do this and that. I made some mistake. It's okay, Lord. I'll try to be next time. Just chant Om Tat Sat. So when you chant Om Tat Sat and do it with feeling, with remembering the Lord, not mechanically, but do it with feeling, do it with remembering the Lord, then what happens is even your mistakes get corrected. It does not mean that if I have done something wrong, it's like, you know, like what they do in the Catholic is where you confess, you ask for forgiveness. So then your mistakes are given, corrected, but then obviously you have to improve your actions. You cannot keep repeating the same mistake and then every day say Om Tat Sat and then throughout the day keep doing the same thing. No, I have to improve. So chanting Om Tat Sat or Om or anything, even Sri Krishna Sharanam Mama or Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, whatever you chant, but whatever form of Lord you are chanting, think about that form, think about the name, and then do it with attention. And that is called correcting the mistake. That is how you can improve yourself by remembering the Lord, Om Tat Sat. Then the Lord also is described as Sat Chit Anand. Sat, Chit, and Anand. So what do we mean by Sat, Chit, and Anand? So Sat is the Lord functioning through the body is called Sat, is existence, right? Because the body exists. The body is not non-existent, of course, at the highest level, even the world does not exist, which of course the Upanishads tell us. But the level where we are functioning at this moment, everything exists. You know, this table exists, the book exists, we exist. So the existence, the I-ness is Sat. So that is existence. And then what is Chit? Chit is that Bhagwan, that consciousness functioning through the mind and intellect, illumining the mind and intellect. Because what are the mind and intellect? They're called as the Antakarana. There are four Antakaranas: Man, Buddhi, Chit, and Ahankar. Man is mind, Buddhi is intellect, Chit is memory, and Ahankar is ego, I. So this four, the mind, intellect, the memory, and the ego is called the antakarana. And through this inner equipment, I know. Through my mind, I know my emotions. Through the intellect, I know the thoughts. But not only that, I know my body and I know all other bodies. Through my mind and intellect, through the eyes I can see, through the ears I can hear, through the nose I can smell. So that is the body. But what happens is the eyes take the message to the mind and the mind registers what I'm seeing, the ears what I'm listening, the nose what I'm smelling, tasting, touching. And then whatever message goes to the mind analyzes it. Mind is like the receiving clerk, you know, like all the mail in nowadays, a lot of things come by email. But in the olden days, the mail used to come, you know, the mailman would deliver the mail. So there is a receiving clerk who opens the mail and checks, you know, what is important, what is not. And then the important things he presents to the boss. Okay, these are the things, how should we act, how should we respond. So the mind is the receiving clerk and the intellect is the boss. So the intellect then tells the mind, okay, you know, you see something, not that person is dangerous, you know, he's carrying a gun and he's in trouble. So let us, you know, either run or, you know, close the door or call the police. Or this person is a saint, is a sweet person. Let's go and prostrate. Let's go and bow down. Let's go and meet him. So depending on the previous experience, because the intellect uses the chit, the memory of the previous experiences, and from that memory, it gives instructions to the mind, okay, this is how you should do. If it's something good, you know, you do it. If it's something bad, you avoid it. So if the intellect is used correctly and if the mind listens to the intellect, such a person is called yukta. Such a person is called united, where the mind and intellect work together. Otherwise, the mind says, I feel like doing this. You know, I feel like eating ice cream. The intellect says, you know, you're a diabetic. You shouldn't be eating ice cream. Your blood sugar this morning was 300. It's okay. These doctors just keep on, you know, giving all these things. I need to feel. So if the mind follows the instructions of the intellect, that is called yukta. But if the intellect says do this and the mind does something else, then that is called disunited. So that is the problem. So the consciousness functioning through the inner equipment, the antakarana, is called chitta. And anand is the bliss. Anand is not joy experience from objects. You know, that is called sukham, or that is called pleasure. Pleasure is, okay, I eat a, you know, ice cream, I get some joy, or I have some chocolate, I get some joy, or I buy a new car or a piece of jewelry or a new dress. So that is all pleasure. You know, I meet a friend and I go to a party. You know, those are all pleasures. Bliss is something beyond pleasure. Bliss is that inner feeling of joy and total fulfillment and total accomplishment, which does not depend on an object to fulfill it. I do not need an object to be happy. I am happy by myself. If the objects are there, fine. If they are not there, I am still fine. So that anand, that bliss, is that inner experience of fullness, completeness. So that is experience. So that is what this Lord is when they call it Sat Chit Anand. And all yajnas, as we said, begin with the chanting of Om. Even the creation started with Om. Any pandit, even here we start the class with chanting Om three times. Or, you know, Om Sahanavavatu Sahanavunaktu. So every mantra starts with Om. Every yajna, any priest who starts any yajna, always starts with Om. And it uplifts the mind. The example they give is, like in the Olympics, suppose there is a marathon runner and he has run 25 and a half miles and he has the last half mile to run and he comes within the stadium, you know, to finish, and there are three people ahead of him, and he, you know, he, suppose he's an American, and it's being held in Los Angeles and the crowd is saying USA, 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 and this guy is fourth and there is a German and a Russian ahead of him. Suddenly he hears the word USA, he gets inspired. Why? Because it's my country, I belong to that. And then he gets excited, and then he gets, from somewhere he finds that extra energy, otherwise he was fourth, and he finds that energy and he pushes himself and crosses and becomes first. Why? Because he was inspired by the higher ideal. I'm no longer running for Mike Jones, but I'm running for the USA. I'm representing my country. So similarly, chanting the name of the Lord and using that as my goal, that I'm not working just for myself or for my family. I'm working for the Lord. He is my goal and He is my ideal and He is my force behind me. So automatically when you work for Him, then you get more energy, then you get more courage, you become more confident. So that is the benefit of chanting Om Tat Sat, because it elevates the mind and takes you from the lower to the higher. From the body, it takes you to the mind and intellect. So these are all evolution, the physical, emotional, intellectual, and then spiritual. So that is how one should evolve. Not only function, some people only work at the body level. Just khao piyo maja karo, you know, eat, drink and be merry. Nothing matters. Others at the mind level, as long as I'm having fun and, you know, things are conducive. Some people at the intellectual level, they want to be very powerful, they want to be very successful, they want to dominate the world. But higher than that is spiritual, where then you become like a saint, you become like Jesus or Buddha or Shankaracharya, where you see the oneness. Because there is only one spirit, there is only one consciousness, which is taking different names and forms. You can call Him Allah, you can call Him Jesus, Buddha, Krishna, Shiva, doesn't matter, Saraswati. So that is the level that we should all work at. So evolve from the body to the mind to the intellect and ultimately to the spirit. So chanting Om Tat Sat, Krishna says, it is the indication of Brahman and the whole world came from it. And by chanting, you come close to that. It's a very, very beautiful verse, because it, until now, I really did not know what the meaning of Om Tat Sat was. But when you study this in detail, and I usually read about 3 to 4 different commentaries when I prepare, it helped me to understand what really this beautiful mantra means. So I'm sure it helped you all. It will help you all too. Any comments?
Like body, mind, and intellect should be happy and satisfied for us to grow the supreme path easier.
No, not necessarily.
If body is bothering, or mind is bothering, or intellect is bothering, it has a little bit.
But that will never be completely satisfied.
No.
You might take multiple lifetimes. Fully, though, your body will never be healthy. Your mind will never be. So, forget the body, mind, intellect. Concentrate on the spirit. It does not mean you don't take care of the body, you neglect the body, mind, but the mind is chanchal. Today it's happy, tomorrow will be unhappy. Today you're fine, and then tomorrow somebody says you're a fool, and then your whole day is gone. You know, pura din kharab ho gaya. So you cannot expect, it's like going to the ocean and waiting, okay, let all the waves die down before I go into the ocean. It'll never happen. World will never give you permanent joy. When you want to go into the ocean, you go and enjoy the wave. So similarly, the mind will never be happy. The intellect will never be satisfied. Body will never be permanently healthy. Something or the, if you keep waiting for this to happen, then you will keep waiting many lifetimes. So they say, ignore the waves and dive into the ocean to enjoy the ocean. So ignore the body, mind, intellect fluctuations and dive into Brahman. Dive into that. And in fact, when you go into that, then even the body, mind, and intellect problems don't bother you as much. You know, I have mentioned last time also, yasmin sthitona dukhena gurunapi vichalyate. Shri Krishna says in the Gita that one who is established in the truth, even the greatest sorrow you can impose on him doesn't affect him. You know, look at Jesus, look at Tukaram, how many problems he had, Gyaneshwar. You know, his whole family was thrown out of the village and they were treated as, you know, untouchables. Narsimha Mehta, so many problems they had. All these Sikh gurus, you know, they were tortured by the Muslims. Nothing affected them. Why? Because they are one with the truth.
Suffering is by choice.
Yeah. Sorrow is optional. Suffering is by choice. Absolutely. Yes.
They both work together. You can separate the mind and intellect.
No, they can work separate. Because mind is the emotions and the intellect is the seat of thoughts.
But if you don't have the mind, then there's no intellect. Like in
True, true. That's why I said we have four in our man, buddhi, chit, ahankar, mind, intellect, ego, and memory. They all work together. But if the mind and intellect do not work together, then that is called disunited. Where intellect says this is the right thing, but the mind does not do it. And then the person follows the mind and does the wrong thing. That's when they don't work together. If that's why they should work together, but sometimes they don't. But yeah, that's a good point.
Like mental patients don't have intellect.
Yeah, that's like okay. You know, the patients are a different, but yeah, that's
true. Have mind and body.
Right.
And body
right. Mental patients don't have, right. But even for us, there is a constant struggle
between
mind and intellect. Who will dominate? And if you let the mind take over, then you're working at the whims of the mind instead of doing what is the right thing. That's what the scriptures tell us. Yeah.
When you said you were asking the question, who am I? Who are you? And you said, I am. What is that? You mean I am God? Or just I am? Who is I?
That we'll be discussing next week. Come next week if you want to hear I am God or not. No, really, it's a very lengthy answer, but I was. That is when we talk about Tat.
Because we do hear what Ahamur Masmi.
Right. Actually, I am not Brahman. Actually, I am Brahman, but I am not God. There is a difference. I'll go into briefly into now and go into more detail since you asked the question. I was going to reserve it for next week. Suppose now there is an ocean and a wave, right? There's a small wave and there is a big ocean. Now, who is the creator? The ocean. And the wave is the created. Now, ocean is permanent. Wave is temporary for a few minutes. Now you tell the wave, what are you? He says, I am a wave. Who created you? The ocean. So ocean is God and wave is created, right? And if you ask the ocean, you say, who are you? He says, I am the mighty ocean. What do you do? I create all the waves. The waves are created in me, sustained by me and merged back into me. So ocean is God for all the waves, right? The waves are the human beings like us, and God is the creator. Now, if you ask the ocean, now if you ask the wave, are you the ocean? What will the wave say? No, I'm not the ocean. I'm a tiny little wave. And the ocean created me, ocean sustained me, and I'll merge back into the ocean. So I was created by Brahmaji, I'm sustained by Vishnu, and I merge back into Shiva, right? The Ishwara. So, wave never says, I am the ocean, right? Does the wave say that? If the wave says, I am the ocean, you'll think it's a fool. So, same way, human being should never say, I am God, because I am not God. You know, God created this whole universe. What have I created in this world? Only confusion, right? Only problems. So, the human being is not God. Human being can never be God. I cannot be like Shiva, you know, destroy the whole world. Or I cannot be like Brahmaji, create the whole universe and plants. And I cannot even create a little leaf. Forget about creating all this beautiful vegetation and flowers, and all the planets and all. So I can never be God, right? Right, I'm coming to that Aham Brahmasmi. I'm coming to that. You are asking that, right?
So that... Right. Wave could have answered, I'm a part of the ocean.
Because they are not dead. Yeah, he's a part of the ocean, but he's not the ocean.
But if you look at it, you can say, I'm the spark of the divine, I'm a part of the divine.
Yeah, you can say I'm part of that, but I'm not the divine still, right? I'm a part of the ocean, I'm a little tiny little part of, but I am not the almighty ocean, right? So then you ask the wave, what are you? So wave says, I'm wave. He said, no, I'm not asking what are you. What are you really? I'm a wave. He said, no, I'm asking you what are you really. Like as you said, no, I'm Indian, I'm male. What are you really? I'm water. Okay, so you are water? Yes, you are water who is taking the form of a wave. Now when the wave is there, the water is there. When the wave ends, the water still remains. Water doesn't perish. The wave dies, but the water... Achha, so you ask the wave, what are you? He says, I'm water. Then you go to the ocean. You say, what are you? He says, I'm the mighty ocean. I created this whole waves. All waves are mine. No. I'm not asking what do you do. What are you really? Ocean says, I am water. So wave is water and ocean is water. Right? So what are they? They are one. Aham Brahmasmi. So when you go to the essence, the Om is the same in both of us. So as long as I think I am the wave, then there is an ocean who is creating me. That's why they say never stop worshipping God. Never stop remembering God. No matter, even you might be a Vedantin, you might have read all the Upanishads. That's what the problem is. Most of us Vedantins, we start thinking we are God. You know, I don't need to worship God. And I am Om, I am beyond all of them. And we stop going to the temple, stop praying and stop. No, don't. Even when you are a realized master, Shankaracharya was the father of Vedanta. He still used to go to every temple and pray to Ganpati and Mother Durga and Saraswati. Whichever temple he went, he composed hymns in praise of that particular Lord. He went to Vishnu temple, Krishna, all of them. So as long as you are in this body, always remember that you are a limited being. And God is almighty, he is my creator, and always remember him. But inside, you should know that I am that immortal spirit who at this moment is occupying this body. And even when the body dies, I won't die. Like the water doesn't die when the wave dies. So once you understand that, then Aham Brahmasmi becomes clear. I heard this from Prabodhji's, Bodhatmanandaji's commentary. Because until now, then it was even not clear to me. Because this Aham Brahmasmi otherwise becomes arrogance. You know, I am God. And that is the most stupid thing to say. The moment anybody says, I am God, to me, in my opinion, he's stupid. Because I can never be God as long as I am an ordinary mortal. But I can be water. I can be that spirit occupying this body. And then that Atman is the same. That one Atman, one spirit, Brahman and I are one at that infinite level, at the absolute level, at the body, mind and intellect level. I am the created and he is the creator. So that when you understand, then it removes all your arrogance. Is that clear? Is that clear?
But we always say God is within me.
Yes.
So what you say to that, like, you know, I'm Brahman.
Yeah, God is within and without. Yeah, that's Om. So he's inside and outside me. Everything is actually God alone. God alone is everything. He is this glass. He is, because everything emerged from him. So everything is that, him or her or it. So he's within and without. I mean, I'm not separate. That's why I'm talking, because Om is functioning through me. But Om is also functioning through everybody. So if I am Brahman, so are they are all Brahman. See, a lot of people think, I am Brahman, but you are all my followers. You should come and prostrate to me. No, not like that. Everything is Brahman. Yes.
On an average, what do you think is the age where one can control the mind? You know, at a certain age, you cannot control the mind because they are kids.
I think depends on your evolution. Raman Maharishi, at age 8, he used to go in deep samadhi where he actually totally dissolved his body and he became one. So it depends on your previous evolution, on your sadhana, how much sadhana you have done. But generally, most of us, it is probably in the later years, because in the youth, the mind is more turbulent. But, you know, look at so many great Mahatma. Shankaracharya, you know, he was by at age 8 or 9, he was giving discourses. So it depends on your spiritual growth, on your evolution.
How can we help make generation? Just I'm talking about my own kids. I want to make them think that what's happening is happening, but you have to control
right
your mind, because that is the reason which creates the most of the problem
right
in the life.
But do you control your mind? You set an example for them.
Right.
Well, I haven't started that yet. I'm not right. That 8 years.
No. Yeah. Right now, let's see what you're doing right now. Huh? What you tell, it doesn't get into their head. What you do, it's into their head.
Right.
So actions are more
example,
better teachers
yes.
than our words.
No, but if that would have been the case, then the whole world would have been natural
now,
because we have so many examples. Atheists can do that and other people work. But it doesn't work. You have to teach, I mean, kind of.
Right.
You need to show with your actions what you want to teach.
And also teach them. How old are they?
The older one is well matured. The younger one is my replica. I can see that. I think I started late. I want as a father, I mean, it's not like something I can control, I can do anything. But I wish he understood sooner than what I did.
How old are they?
The older one is 21, younger one is 18.
Okay, yeah, they are actually quite matured, yeah. But I think just by, actually the teaching happens in the early years. You know, once they're 18 and 21, it is hard to teach them. They might learn a little bit, or they might see your example, how you work. See, if you work hard and, you know, you don't give in to your vagaries of the mind and your, so those examples, they will, or maybe spending time with them, you know, taking vacation, going for a week, you know, if to Hawaii or Australia or Europe. So spending time where you develop the closeness. So that is one way to teach them. That's at least I used to try, as long as when my kids were home, every year take 1 or 2 weeks vacation and go with them to some exotic place. So those, because I remember my childhood, my father used to take us 2 weeks every year, used to take vacation, and we will go to different parts of India, South India, North India, you know, Central. So those were very pleasant memories. So creating pleasant memories, so that's how you become close to them, and then they learn from your example.
Because what I have seen that, right, you know, we have seen that Diya Tale Andhera. I mean, you will find so many big people in the next generation, they have nothing.
Right.
Like Mahatma Gandhi and his own kids. Like Pandit Jasraj and his own kids.
Right.
Like even Krishna. We worship Lord Krishna, and he is the one who created Gita.
Right.
And the whole Yadav was destroyed because of his own son.
Right.
So just deeds or just doing and showing it to them, that doesn't absolutely work for everyone. But I'm trying to think that, like we started here in Chinmay Mission.
The Balia, right.
Hopefully, all fertilizers will just make some people realize early.
Right. No, I think Bal Vihar definitely has impact. Yeah, I'll come to you one second. Because again, I did not go to Bal Vihar, but I listened to Swami Chinmayanandaji's lectures when I was a teenager. I spent a lot of yagnas, you know, entire Gita yagnas. I've listened to several chapters, and that memory stays. You know, that those seeds stay with you. Yeah, you had a comment.
Well, you can be a parent. I'll pull you up until a certain age.
Yeah,
it's all about parenting. But then after that, and I see you with my own child, and coming here, I've learned that each individual that is born into us has their own vasanas, and so we can't influence that. You know, there comes a point where you have to just allow your child to be whoever he is going to be, and to help him learn that life is all about becoming better.
Right.
You know, but you can't control that.
Right. They say not for the first 5 years you love them. The next 5 years you discipline them, and then after age 10 you become their friend. Yeah, so you can teach them in the first 10 years basically. After that it becomes more and more difficult, but I think people learn throughout life. You and I, we are still learning. You know, every time I prepare, I learn so much. So we are constantly learning. So encourage them to explore new things and learn and share with them.
Fear in them, and they doubt what they are doing. Only consequences when you concentrate at that age, because after 18, you can mend. The tree is already grown. With small plant, then you can mend.
Right.
The ideas, the thoughts, and their beliefs.
True.
Just showing and telling the consequences. That's all you have to fear. You shouldn't say, do this, do that. I don't tell my daughter, you have to do this. You can do whatever you want, but these are the consequences. Whatever channel you want to do, go ahead. But
yeah,
you are going to pay for your consequences, not me.
True. That's a good
point. So that is a fear, what she thinks, and that's great. She has, because I can't be every single minute. So she has to be, and she has to watch herself.
Mm-hmm.
And I tell her to watch herself when she's angry. Watch yourself, watch your tone, watch your posture, watch your words. If you tell like 10, 15 times, it is one time,
it's
in their
head.
Right.
And then where they're in major crisis of their life, they think, oh, okay. Because they might not use right now.
Yep.
But when there's nobody around and they're like depressed, that's
yeah,
when the words come and they think, they act. Yeah, you can't expect immediate solution,
yes,
or immediate action to the reaction. It seeds in their brain, it grows.
Right.
And often from there, at the same point, is when they make their own mistakes, you have to continue to love them and let them know that they're accepted.
Right.
And just
correct
them,
that's all.
And it's
well,
not
showing
that you can't even correct them at that point.
You have to
praise
it. Critic is different and criticism is different. You're not criticizing a person. Your critic is the topic, what went wrong, you're analyzing with them.
Yeah, but at a certain point you can't correct them.
Right.
No, not correcting them. The point what went wrong, you're trying to analyze with them. You can suggest. Yes.
Suggest, and then, like she said, I'm available. You know, I always love them.
Yeah. No matter what.
Right. Same thing, Krishna in the Gita, nowhere he says, thou shalt do this. Everywhere he says, this is one choice, this is another. If you do this, these are the consequences. Like you said, if you don't do this, these are the, and the choice is yours. And he, even in the end of the 18th chapter, he says, this knowledge I have given you, and now, yat echasi tat kuru. Whatever you wish, you do, but the consequences are very clear. So I think that's throughout.
I think I see a lot of Asian or Indian parents trying to force them, oh, I'm a doctor, let my daughter be a doctor, my son be a doctor. Why? They have their own choices. They can be like talented. Sachin Tendulkar is not good in school. His parents are proud right now. So as Indian parents, we think like, oh, they have to be a doctor. Nah, man. Like, his vocabulary. Like, no. They have their own asanas, they have their own talent, let them build. Let them show. Why do you want them to be like you? They're different human beings with different asanas. That's how I feel. Okay. Let her grow if she's going around path for her responsibility and show the consequences. Eksaal jayega, dosaal jayega, then they didn't mention it. So
right.
One or two mistakes they make, it, let them learn. They have to fall down for them to be formed. I don't know, that's how I feel. They have to be strong to stand when they fall down.
What
he
says is, how do I bring them to the path of God?
They
that's what.
No, I think you can still influence by your example, by talking, like I said, spending time, going out, and then encouraging them to do the right thing, you know. And
to reach to God, there are so many ways, and I know
right.
That I've seen my own dead liver steps in temple, but worshipping God every day and using, and that's why I was not that much into it, but now I can see that I started, you know, as a parent, we want what we found, which is nice, we want to pass it on to our kids. So I can see that how peaceful I am just because I'm coming here and just thinking and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
I want them to happen to them earlier. And they're just as selfish. I know that. But that's why I was asking you that what age normally the mind and intellect, you can make them think, you know what, whatever you are saying, because when you are in the motion, whatever anybody says makes no sense.
Right.
If you're mad at something, even your best friends say something, you don't listen to them. You feel like you're not right. But when time passes, then you feel. So, I mean, both of them are doing great. I mean, it's not like I'm up. But I want to see that if they can understand the reality of this reaching to God, if it occurs to them earlier, they will have longer peaceful life.
Yeah, I think for an average individual, it's hard. Like I'm telling my own example. As a teenager, because I was under my mother's influence, I went to all of Swami Chinmayananda's quite a few lectures, several entire yagnas I have heard. She took me to Rajneesh. I have heard Rajneesh talk. I've heard some of the Mahatmas of our faith, you know, Pranami faith. So she used to take me forcibly. I never knew, and half the time I didn't even remember. But then once I left home and I started going to college, I never went. Never went to temple, never went to Chinmaya Mission, never went to lectures, nothing. For almost 15 or 20 years of my college, afterwards post graduation and all that, and then started my practice. Never then, when my kids were 5 and 7, then I said, you know what? They are growing up in the U.S. They're not going to have the Hindu culture, and they're not going to have the values. My mother used to take me to Chinmaya Mission, so we need to start. So that's how we started the classes here. A few of us got together. So when you are faced with that, then suddenly you realize that it's not easy to bring up children. And that's when the importance of values comes. So I think they may learn. And even if they don't, as long as they are good human beings, that is important. Rather than forcing them to go to the temple and all. Yes?
I think we want a lot for our children. And we want them to be like us, because we have found something for ourselves and we've built on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was raised Catholic, and I know, you know, that my mother wanted me to be Catholic, but what she wanted and what I needed and wanted to become was something totally different. And had I become what my parents had wanted me to be, I would be totally different than the person I am today. So it's allowing the children to find, to explore their own life.
Yeah, like you're teaching yoga. I mean, you know, that's something which is so non-Catholic.
Yeah.
In fact, they tried to teach yoga in schools, and a lot of the fundamentalists opposed it because they said this is a Hindu influence that we are putting on our kids.
I just want to add a comment. You know, don't worry about it now. What you do, the children are observant.
That's true.
When they are on their own, it will click to them like that. And that I'm going through that right now with my girls. And they do question me. And why? How should I? Or what do I? You know, and so don't worry about it now. It will work. As long as you are doing it, they'll learn.
Sure.
And, you know, I have one question. So, what is the reason why Maeve and Ocean have trouble seeing that they are what? Just like we hear the example of gold and ornaments and pot and mud, right? Is it just ego, ignorance, sanskar? What is it why?
Yeah, and that's a very good question. So wave and ocean, of course, they are inert. They have no way of knowing that. It is we who, I'm just using that as an example. But I as an individual have this ego that I am the perceiver, feeler and thinker. And I am this body, mind and intellect. And we have been conditioned not only in this life, but ever since I was a protozoa. I was a protozoa amoeba crawling in the water. Till then they say, you are this protozoa, you need to multiply. You need to go get food. You need to run away from danger. So from even a plant, you know, runs away from, you know, I mean, you know, like it goes towards the sunlight. So from childhood, we are conditioned to thinking we are this body, not only from this life, but from many lifetimes. And even in the, like our children and all, we don't tell them you are Brahman. See, because we don't give them this knowledge. And also this knowledge that you are Brahman is not going to help you in school, it's not going to help you in college, not going to help you in job. So most people don't give this knowledge to their children. But what Swami Chinmayananda started was Bal Vihar, so that the children like now Naina and Ravi's class, they are told they are Brahman. Naina tells them, you know, that you are Brahman, you are not this body. And the concepts of Hinduism, she asked them to meditate and all. So that's what Swami Chinmayananda's vision was, to teach children that there is something higher than just earning a living and becoming a doctor or engineer or professor and all, which is required. So most of the children's education is geared towards how they will become more successful in the world. They become rich, they become successful, they become powerful. So this knowledge that you are Brahman is not taught. And it is a very few people out of hundreds of, there are how many, 3,000 Indian families in Bakersfield. How many of them come to when Swamiji's come? Hardly 30 or 40 people show up. Even though we advertise, we promote, we send emails, you know, we have sent flyers. So majority of the people are not interested because all they're interested in is objects, emotions and thoughts. Money, power, you know, love, you know, things, success. So it is very few. In fact, somebody asked Swami Tejomayanandaji when he was, you know, when he was became head, he said, why is it only 300 or 400 people come to your lectures? He said, I'm surprised even 300, 400 come. He said, I'm happy at least that many. Like even now 25, 30 are coming. I feel so, you know, so grateful that all of you, because of that, I am forced to read and prepare. So most of us are not taught that. Or even if we are taught, we think that is for after retirement. You know, after 65, then I mean, right now is my time to have fun. So even when we are told we are Brahman, we don't believe it. Or we don't apply that. We don't think about it.
So the answer is ignorance.
Ignorance.
Right? Yes. The second is because you gave the example of Shankaracharya. So then there is some role for sanskar too, right?
Yes.
Whatever you brought from the previous.
Right. From the previous life.
You can get it earlier if you have that.
Absolutely. Right. And all, yeah, like Swami Chinmayananda, he was brought up in a very, very religious family. They used to do hours of puja, Shiv puja. And he used to sit and watch the Shiva form and close his eyes and then try to visualize, open his eyes and close his eyes. So because he used to get bored in the pujas, so how he used to entertain himself by looking at Shiva and then trying to close his eyes and see if he can reproduce that entire form. So that is a form of upasana. Unknowingly, he was doing that. And then he went to college and he became an atheist. In fact, in that movie, it says, you know, he won the doubles match and the other one said, oh, thanks to Ganesha because of whom we won. He said, you mean Ganesha came and hit this double, this backhand? I hit the backhand, not Ganesha. Why are you thanking him? I'm the one who won the match for us. So he was a total atheist till he met a guru, you know, Shivanand, whom he went to expose. So I think the childhood samskaras help, but then sooner or later they mature. So that's why teaching them in childhood is very important, and then not losing faith that they are getting somehow. But eventually they will come back.
So no, the answer to that question is the knowledge or lack of knowledge. An individual person is on their own individual journey or samskar, whatever you want to call it.
Right.
So
right.
I think the answer to this discussion, that's what I'm gathering. But that would be the
true
answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because when you hear all these kind of stories, you just feel like that we have to find a way so we can take this journey and continue next life. All these discussions help us what is right, what is wrong. But if we believe in reincarnation, we are coming back. Like when my dad was diagnosed with cancer and we used to go to Ravi Bhai's hospital every day, I used to talk to him and say, you know, if you pray to God, find a way so you can take your music to next life because you've worked so hard all these years and so much knowledge you have, which you cannot give to me because I'm your son. So see if you can pray to God and take this one, like that Astavakra, I was just listening. He was in mom's tummy and he was telling his dad that your pronunciation is not right. So there are stuff, but we have to, I mean, the reason I'm here is I want to find a way, perhaps, so if anywhere I come next life, I can start over.
Yeah, but again, I think waiting for next life to me is an error.
Yes.
Because you already know you are Brahman. You already have the Gita, you have the Upanishads. In this life itself, I should realize. Why wait for next life? I should do it now. Today itself, from today onwards, if you say I'm Brahman and start acting as Brahman, you are realized. Become calm, become peaceful. So, see, Hindus, we have this myth that if I don't achieve in this life, I will achieve in next life, which is true. But the scriptures are not meant for tomorrow, not meant for next year, not meant for next life. They are meant for now. From today onward, I should start practicing Om Tat Sat, remembering Om Tat Sat, and I am that water, I am not the wave. That I should, and then I should bring that in my vyavahar. That's why they say, na, Shravan, Manana, Niti, Dhyasan. So I listen to the Gita and the Upanishad, then I think about it, and then I apply it. Then only the knowledge is complete. It's like I studied medicine, but I never saw a patient. Or you study music, and then when it's time to perform in front of a crowd, you get, you know, frozen. And your music knowledge is of no use. So I should start applying that knowledge from today. So that's why it says I am, not I was or I will be. Sometime in the future, I will be Brahman. You know, I will realize. No, I am Brahman. I am right now. So that's what Eckhart Tolle says, living in the now. You know, because everything is now. It is now. There is no future. Even when the future comes, it will come as now. So that's why I am is very important. And so start living today as Brahman. Start acting as Brahman. Be more calm, be more peaceful, be more loving, be more accepting of others. That is what Lord does, right? He accepts all of us. He loves us, takes care of us. Even the worst criminal, mass murderer, he still gives him oxygen every day and sustains his body, you know. So he forgives. Yeah. Yes.
Studying about charity and giving for, you know, several shows. And then all of a sudden, we are now learning about Om Tat Sat. I couldn't figure out how that shloka comes after everything. It didn't seem to flow.
But did it now? Was I able to explain it? That how these activities can be improved, how my mistakes can be corrected, and so I can go from tamas to rajas to sattva by chanting Om Tat Sat, by remembering the Lord. That's why I introduced that, the surrender, the motive. Don't, you know, observe yourself, remember the Lord's name and all that. So to connect I know, because for me also it was confusing. Why suddenly these five, it's a very good question. I myself never understood why suddenly Krishna out of the blue says Om Tat Sat. But when you listen to Swami Chinmayananda's commentary, and then I also have other Swamiji's commentaries, it helps to connect that, because they do that. Although I myself, whatever little I know is again from listening to all these. I actually Friday and Saturday evening, I sit down and I have like 4 or 5 books in front of me. And I'm trying to compile all that. So it helps me to learn a lot, because I have Eknath Ishwaran, then I have Chinmayananda's book as well as his audio tape, and then I have some other Swamiji's like either Shantananda or Ishwarananda. So I try to combine 4 or 5 different, and then a little bit of my own, whatever little I know, I add to that. But yeah, no, it's a very good question. Thank you. So we don't have time. What I'll do is I'll just translate the words about Om, and then we'll do it next week. Tasmad Om ityudahritya yajnadana tapakriyaha pravartante vidhanoktaha satatam brahmavadinam. So tasmat, therefore, Krishna says, having studied the importance of Om Tat Sat, now he's talking about Om. So for this verse is Om, then he will talk about Tat and Sat. Tasmat Om iti udahritya, chanting Om, do all your activities, yajna, dana and tapa. Yajna, as I said, is community activities, dana is charity, and tapa is self-control. So all activities of your world, all kriya should be done by chanting Om. Begin by chanting Om. That means remember the Lord before you do anything. Before you start your day in the morning, get up in the morning, lie down in the bed and say Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudeva. Whatever your Lord is, you know, name of the Father and the Son and the Holy. So don't get up from bed without chanting. Don't start your day. So pravartante, so vidhan oktaha, it is described in the scriptures, vidhan oktaha. So satatam brahma vadinam, so those vadinam, those who are pursuing Brahman, those who are on the spiritual path, satatam pravartante, they always begin all activities, yajna, dana, tapa, by chanting Om. So next week I'll talk in detail about Om. I actually have a CD. I had given a talk on the meaning of Om, if anybody is interested. This actually has a lot of different interpretations of Om. It's $5 if somebody wants to buy it. It's 30 minutes. And it gives a very good summary of from the different scriptures, from Gita, from Upanishads, about the meaning of Om. And then this Mandukya Upanishad, this is the last copy in the office, which is a beautiful commentary on Om. It's a little high. But if you're interested, you can buy that. But otherwise, next week, we'll go into more detail about the meaning of Om. Any other questions? Okay, so we'll see you next week. Thank you, everybody, for your comments. It's always good when, you know, people participate. It helps to clarify. And we do have lunch, so stay for lunch afterwards. Om Sarve Bhavantu Sukhinaha. Sarve Santu Niramayaha, Sarve Bhadrani Pasyantu, Makasche Dukha Bhagbhave, Om Shanti Shanti Shanti, Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha, Hari Om.